You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we're coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. Our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, our show will help you to question your career reality. And this show is for you if you are considering a career in the entertainment industry. Now, our guests will provide you with advice and resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in show business. And our guests work in various professions and are at different stages of their career. So that means that we will definitely have someone on the show who will be able to help you with your show business career questions. Now, if you want to check out our past guests, read their bios, listen to their interview instantly, or download one of the shows, go to the LA Talk Radio website. That's latalkradio.com. Click on the link at the top of the website that says Channel 1, scroll down and look for a graphic of our show, Question Reality, and click on the link. And this takes you directly to the archive page. And that is where you can view the list of past guests. And all of our radio shows on LA Talk Radio are also available for download on iTunes under the podcast section and on Stitcher.com. So just type in Question Reality Radio in the search box, and there you go. We're all there. And if you want to go, you want to get a free app, wonderful app, go to the LA Talk Radio homepage, and you can download the free apps for your Android and iPhone. Yay! Everybody needs the app for the LA Talk Radio show. It's a fantastic show. You want to learn about sex? You can learn about sex. You got a psychological bipolar disorder, addicted to hydrocodone and oxycodone? Well, there's a show for you. There's all kinds of shows at the station, so get that free app. Everything. You can actually go to college and get a psychology degree for some of the people that are here. Now, if you want to find out about our future guests, or if you want to if you work professionally in the entertainment industry and you want to come on our show to share your sage wisdom and advice or promote your projects, we want you on the show. Now, we're just starting to book guests for 2015. As you know, our shows are booked 6 months to a year in advance. We're hot and happening over here. We're the place to be to get your stuff out there. Woo is right. And so we are booking now. We're booked up until March. So you better send me an email soon. It seems like it's far in advance, but I'm telling you, time flies. The wrinkles come, the breasts turn into village feeders. Time goes fast. So get your booking now. Okay, so to do that, you want to go to our official website, which is questionrealityradioshow.com, and fill out the brief contact form, and that's how we'll get back to you. Now, as I'm so excited because we have a fantastic guest for you today. Every week our guests are super duper supernova quality guests, and that is no exception today. We have the lovely, gorgeous, bearded Larry, and if I say his name wrong, he is going to do something to me because he's very close. Nemesek. Actually, this is the first introduction of the applause track. Now, I know it's all because Larry was coming on. I had to do an applause track. I just didn't think his appearance warranted anything less than a crowd of people applauding. So, without further ado, let's say welcome, Larry.
Oh, Priscilla, thank you. That was the spaciest applauding crowd I've ever heard.
I know. Well, you know, I have been wanting to do an applause track forever, and we could just never find the right one. They always sound very opera. So finally today I was able to find one, a football applause. So.
Oh, okay. I take that.
I just wish they were doing more wows and woos for you. I wanted more wows and woos, but we're going to take that. Now, let me just tell you, for those who do not know Larry, let me give you his website address right now so you can go over there and check him out while we are going through his little brief bio. It's LarryNemecek.com. That's Larry, of course, LarryNemecek.com. So go over to his website. He has tons of websites, but we're going to start with that one and filter the rest in because he's got like 42 to 47. I'm not sure. It took up a whole page. But that's because the man is accredited. And, you know, I got to tell you, I got to apologize to you because when I saw my husband Albert said, oh, look at this. He has done cross promotion. And you were talking about how you came to be on the radio show. And you said that I accosted you
in
the best way. And I thought, oh, my God, I hope I didn't force the man to be on here. He thinks I'm probably going to stalk him if he doesn't come on here.
Are you kidding?
Oh, my God. We met at the Burbank Film Festival. I'm a screener for the Burbank Film Festival. And how did you come to be at the Burbank Film Festival?
Well, I was there for Star Trek Continues.
Oh, yes.
Supporting
that's
our
right.
group, yes.
That's right. Larry, and we'll get to that, but Larry was in two episodes.
The first two, right.
As Dr. McCoy on Star Trek Continues, StarTrekContinues.com. And we recently had Vic Mignogna and Michelle Specht on. The show was fantastic.
It was
just incredible. Now, Albert is the one who said, there's Larry. And he is the one who forced me over.
Oh,
I'm like, who's Larry?
You're going to blame Albert.
Who's Larry?
Okay.
And he's like, I want him to come on the show. I loved him as Dr. McCoy in Star Trek Continues. So I said, oh, Lord, let me get over there and give him my best sales pitch.
So this is like good stalker, bad stalker? Is
absolutely. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Larry. Larry, he's multi-hyphenated. We just have to start. He is an author, an editor, an interviewer, an archivist, a host, a producer, and an actor. And he's known as Larry Dr. Trek Nemecek. And he has a background in news and theater, but it's in Trekland where he's worked for over 20 years. And he wrote the classic Next Generation Companion and the new Stellar Cartography map book set. He worked on the storied Star Trek The Experience in Las Vegas. Didn't we go see that, Albert, when we were in Vegas, right?
Yeah, we did.
Oh,
we
good.
Did.
Yeah, good. You saw it before it was gone.
Yeah. Yes. And we actually got pictures taken with Vulcans and the little Ferengis.
Yeah, that's my profile picture on Facebook right now.
Yeah, it's a Ferengi. The Ferengi.
There
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was with a Klingon.
Yeah, yeah. So we got the pictures. I'm really upset they took that little thing.
Yeah, you and a few million other people.
Oh,
yeah.
It was wonderful. And then Larry also long edited Communicator Magazine. He writes in Star Trek Mag Today. And, as we said earlier, played Dr. McCoy in two episodes of the Geeky Award-winning Star Trek Continues. Not only a Geeky Award, but they won the award right. at the Burbank Film Festival,
too.
They got
too. New Media Short?
Yeah,
yes,
New Media
yes,
Short. Oh, yes, my drama. God. It's just a phenomenal. It's probably, and they have a
short,
lot.
Short meaning 1 hour or less.
Yes.
Versus a feature, because it was a TV episode length.
Right.
Right.
And it's one of the, it's probably, in my opinion, of course, it's the best website series that's a replication of Star Trek because they have many, many, many shows. I just think that one is done the best. And I'm going to follow a Trekkie. I had not even watched any of the Star Trek episodes until I met him when we got married in 96. So I have become an appreciator of Star Trek, but not a Trekkie, but he forces me to watch it, and out of all of them that he's forced me to watch, Star Trek Continues is the best.
Well,
far is the best.
Far be it for me to stomp on that opinion.
So you guys go and check out StarTrekContinues.com if you want to see the best of the Star Trek. What are they called? What were they called?
The old term is fan films, but the bar is raising so much higher and higher, and there are so many people, professionals, that are working on them.
Right.
Because there's no hope of money because, you know, CBS, Paramount, you can't make money on it. So people are doing it for the love, and, you know, if it's good enough, they're thrilled to put it in their demos and their credit rules and everything.
Yeah.
And their reels.
These fan-based shows, that's what they're called, fan-based shows, they are able to command celebrities. The Star Trek Continues, I believe they had, of course, Erin Gray, who was supposed to come on my show, and then she had to go to London for a convention, but they had Lou Ferrigno.
Right.
I think the Forrest guy reprised his role.
Right, Michael Forrest?
Michael Forrest, Apollo.
Long-time wonderful actor.
Who else? Albert was on there.
You had Michael Dorn on the third episode.
Right.
And you had Deanna Troi.
Yeah.
Who was, what's her name?
Marina Sirtis.
Yeah. So these Star Trek episodes.
Jamie Bamber was a cameo in the first episode.
Yeah.
From Battlestar.
Yeah. Welcome. So they're able to command these celebrities. So check them out. A lot of people say, "Oh, I'll never watch it." You know, the original, blah, blah, blah. But they're done very well. And the sets, oh my god, I just can't get over the set, especially the one on Star Trek Continues. I mean, it's like looking at the Enterprise.
It's amazing. Yeah, those are down in Georgia. We share that with the Farragut Films fan series too, which is set on a lot of the fan films. They do different ships and different crews, but this is one of the two that does Kirk, Spock, McCoy.
Right.
You know, so,
and they were actually able to get the original, that little ship. What is that called? The little ship, and it was in a museum.
The original Galileo.
I was shocked to hear that.
That just got renovated and put on display in Houston.
And they got to shoot
in front of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was. You got to check that out just for the visionary aspect. Now, also, Larry has his Trekland blog of vidchats and Trekland on speaker remastered interview CDs. Are these CDs that you? What are these?
See, I realized after doing interviews, because I did the companion book and started doing long. I do these 1-2 hour interviews with everybody, the writers, directors, the designers, the people that are really making the decisions on the shows that the fans want to know about. For the books, and then I kept up through Voyager, DS9, through Enterprise, and after a few years, I had it's a great resource, and I would go back and, you know, some of it hasn't even been transcribed. I would just sit down with people while we were all there, whether I had a purpose for it or not. I've got 6-8 cartons of cassette tapes. Now, I've got like hundreds of hours of talking with people that I need to transcribe, and I thought I need to get them digitized and get them off the plastic. So in the middle of doing that, I thought I could take chunks of these and do a theme, and then as books come in and out of print, this is something I can control and do, and it's mine. So that's what I've had for conventions and appearances. We wrote like liner notes and we've got 3 editions now. I debut one at the Vegas Trek Convention every year.
Okay.
And just did the third one. And
the Comic-Con convention, too?
Yeah, I'll have some there coming up. All of those.
All of
the conventions. And Kamikaze is coming up here in L.A., and I'll be
so
there.
So you are a regular at all of the conventions.
A lot of conventions. I've been doing since Continues and since Stellar Cartography came out, I've been doing more and more.
So what's the next one that you're going to be at?
Next weekend.
Okay.
I'm going to be in London for the Destination Star Trek London show.
Wow!
Which is, I haven't got to go to London in about 12 years for a convention.
Wow, exciting! So
it's a huge show.
So you have your own booth, or are you part of the Star Trek Continues? Or
no, it'll be my own booth.
Your own booth.
Right.
And what can we get there if we come to see you?
If you come to London?
Yes.
I'll have some photos from some of my acting, and I'll have my on speaker CDs. We've got 3, and the first one is out of print. I'm going to have it on download, iTunes and all, but the second and third are all about the finale of Next Gen, the finale of DS9 their anniversaries. So, you know, Ron Moore, Brandon Braga, the late great Michael Piller, late great director Rick Colby. A lot of these people that aren't around anymore. See, this is why it's, and they're all from in the day. These are our long interviews from 94, from 99. you know, and it's not memory, hazy memory, and it's not people fudging. It's just sitting and talking in their offices, and phones ring, and people interrupt, and
you know, it's very organic.
It is. It's very, very, very original.
Now, also, you have, what is this? I'm not sure what I'm reading, but it says that you bridge Star Trek, the old one, and the new one, like you do in your documentary project, the 1982 Meltdown Turn Miracle Con of Wrath. What is that?
Yeah. Well, all I meant about the new and old was that I've got material from, you know, from the, not so much the original series, I was a fan of that, but came to L.A. and started working on my book, and we moved out here in the 90s. And have been here ever since, and worked at the studio, and worked on the original StarTrek.com, and still do now. And it's a bridge between history and keeping that fresh, and keep unearthing it, and then also keeping up with what's going on with the Bad Robot JJ movies and all the trends, the merchandise, what the fans are doing. I mean, what technology and the digital revolution is letting people, you know, fan films are tip of the iceberg. People are, you know, doing games and the props and CGI art. I mean, there's just so much that people are so empowered now in social media. I mean, even at conventions, people go and do their own things at conventions. It's not like just sheep going from, you know, event to event. People jump in and they organize their own, you know, bowling tournaments. And they are, I mean, you know, like at the Vegas Trek and some of the other big conventions. Vegas is all Trek. But the Comic-Cons, you know, Trek represents Trek is represented there, and anyway, there's all
they've got.
All
every
matter.
There, yeah. I'm telling you, I have with the exception of the obsession with Steve Jobs and Macintoshes, I have not seen anything so obsessive like these Star Trek fans. They're wonderful, aren't they? They love it. You know, my cousin just told me a couple months ago. I forgot to tell you this, Albert. She went to a store, and I don't know, I think this is black market illegal, but they had, talking about Ferengi, they had some Ferengi, it was like a, you know, a sexual pleasure chest store. And they had some Ferengi things for men. And I'm like, what? I can't imagine that they would endorse these things. But it's the fans think of it. There's nothing that doesn't have Star Trek or some sci-fi.
I'm going to take your word for it on that.
It is.
Okay.
I might send you some for Christmas, Larry.
It does surprise me.
I'm going to hunt it down. So is this a movie?
Can't wait to see the wrapping paper.
I know. Is this a movie that you're working on? Because currently, don't you have a fundraising campaign for
this? Yeah, I have a low-key, just ongoing. It's kind of a small budget, but it's something I knew I could do. The Con of Wrath is about a real-life event that happened in Houston in 1982, right after the Wrath of Khan opened. Some local fans who had done conventions had this huge idea, got Harve Bennett and Walter Koenig, who played Chekhov, and Harve Bennett was the producer of most of the original series movies. It was the biggest, convention. Star Trek, you know, wrote the book on pop culture, about. Okay, I mean, before Star Trek, we had, you know, rock bands and swing, you know, like Frank Sinatra, and we had movie stars. And before, you know, but there wasn't any the way fandom we think of it now.
Right.
About a show. I mean, the Monkees had a letter writing campaign, you know, kind of a thing. But Star Trek invented all this pop culture, because Star Wars was right after, and then we were where we are today. And then the internet came along and bang. You know, somebody said once that the porn and Star Trek built the internet.
Yeah.
You know,
I can hear it.
So social media and all that now, but that, you know, back when things were new, the first conventions, there had been literary conventions like the Worldcons, but the first media actor we love this show conventions were Star Trek in 72.
Right.
So barely 10 years later, they had this idea for this basically a rock show thing. It wasn't just stand on stage and answer questions and sign pictures. They were going to do a show, arena show. In the arena where the Houston Rockets played at the time, the NBA basketball. Mm-hmm. 18,000 seats, have an orchestra, have Nichelle Nichols sing, Walter Koenig write a play, do a Reader's Theater. They had the entire cast from Wrath of Khan, including Kirstie Alley and the late Merritt Buttrick. Everyone but Leonard Nimoy, who a week beforehand then wanted to come, and they told him no.
What?
It's amazing.
They turned Leonard down!
But here's the thing, they had all the LA people are there, fans are coming in, dealers are coming in, the locals are there, who can handle it, they're dreaming about it, they're being told it's a sellout. Three shows, sellouts, and then there was a regular convention going on at the same time, right? The regular Houston Con convention. And as we say in my blurb, it did not all go as it was supposed to. But this was the first big, huge, mega event show
right.
thought up for Star Trek, and it's just becoming infamous. And I was there. It was my first, like, road show, road con, you know, road trip for a convention with a couple of my buddies and my brother when we were, like, in college. And it was like, okay. 4 years ago, I run across a guy at a party after a convention, and he's talking about Houston and the Ultimate Fantasy. That was the name of it. Speaking of porn, it's
the
like
Ultimate
porn.
Fantasy. Oh,
but nothing had been done like that up till then. See, and it was huge. But by the end of the weekend, this Con of Wrath title, this is what some of the fans, they were calling it Ultimate Fallacy, the Ultimate F Up, the Ultimate, you know, whatever. And somebody came up with the idea of the Con of Wrath to call it. We survived the Con of Wrath. So I didn't make up the title. They were calling it that week.
I like
buttons
that.
And everything. So I met this guy and I thought, you know what? That needs to be preserved.
Yeah.
Before it's totally out of our memory hole. And I realized I've been a word guy and I've been wanting to do some kind of a project. And I realized I could do this myself. It would be very doable. That Walter and George Takei and Nichelle Nichols, those guys would talk to me at least. And the locals are all still in Houston, and there are people around the country. And there's it's all come together, and we're getting, it's just been a little project, weekend project, but we're moving along with it.
So you got tons of things going on, but what I wanted to talk about, I did not know this, that actually Albert, being your biggest fan, put this down as a question. So I wanted to get this question out for you, and I hope this is correct information, but I understand that in 1994, you and your wife pitched and sold a script, Reflections, entitled Reflections, for the yet-to-air Star Trek Voyager,
right.
Which ended up later being updated and renamed Prophecy and used in the last season of Voyager.
Yeah.
So for all of our writers listening, can you please tell us how that came to be? And the whole process of how you pitched the script and how did that happen?
Well, Star Trek, since Michael Piller had come in through Next Generation and DS9 and Voyager, you're supposed to have an agent, you're supposed to know someone, and that was kind of it. Star Trek was such a huge critter, and they were always so desperate for ideas that Michael wanted to open it up, but they had the legal thing of we can't get sued if we, you know, they had to have legal protections. So they came up with a release form. And then they would take – people could send in spec scripts. So they had opened the door to fandom that way. Now, we were pitching because I had been around for 2 or 3 years working on my book. People knew me. And my wife had just taken a temp job and was working in the script office in the Hart building there. So on Voyager. So we had an in. But at the same time, Star Trek was the one show that tried this huge experiment in being creative. They finally shut it down with Enterprise just because people – out around the country still didn't get it. That's because they thought they had an original idea. There might be 15 other people that had the same idea, and only one of them, you know, they'd buy it from one person, which then they would, you know, arbitrate it with the WGA, and it got shut down again.
Mm-hmm.
But that was kind of the reason why no one does it. But for all those years, it was great. But the whole story shows, get your foot in the door, be creative. I wrote book. I was interviewing people, mm-hmm. and they knew that we were smart and had a clue. And, it was an in, but it was an intelligent in.
And how much was your original script edited from Reflections, which became Prophecy,
right.
from on the last season?
Well, it was about one of the characters. The blonde was the half-Klingon character. And, of course, Voyager was the show about the ship lost in the Delta Quadrant. It's kind of like the Gilligan's Island of Star Trek a little bit, although without, you know... the goofiness and the fast motion.
right.
But we said, okay, well, working on other ideas, we sat down. We pitched several times, and we pitched on both of the DS9 and Voyager both. This is the only one we ever sold. And on one hand, it's like goofy because it was like the most obvious token thing we came up with. Well, they've got a half-Klingon character. Let's have a show where they come across Klingons in the way out in the Delta Quadrant. Ooh, what are they doing out here? And it's a generational ship that's gone... You know, that's been going for 100
years. You and your wife write it.
We both, we wrote it together and pitched it. And of course, of everything we came up with, that's the one they bought.
Yeah.
But then it kept getting kicked down the road because something would be, there'd be some reason for delaying it. And we got paid for it.
Oh.
But after the third or fourth year, and I could, the long story short is that after 3 or 4 years, I thought they're never going to make this because the characters were evolving. So the last season, when Ken Biller was the showrunner, when Brandon and Rick were working on Enterprise, he flagged me and said, hey, do you have your notes from that story you sold way back in the beginning? And I thought, oh, my God, you mean they're going to, you know, I don't say this, you know, knock wood. They're going to do it? Because it would still be fun to see your,
right,
you know.
Of
and
course.
We had pitched lots of things, and we'd had some near misses, like a lot of good people had done. So, but it would be fun to see that. And they were, yeah, it had to be updated. She was married. She was pregnant. They had to update it. But the thing about it being Klingons and it being a B'Elanna story was what was central. A lot of the details got added into that. So, yeah, 7 years later, six, 7 years later, it had to be.
Are they doing reruns of Voyager? Because I haven't seen it anymore.
I got a check for $8 the other day. So.
I was going to ask, do you still get royalties from that thing? Okay, I'm going to do some email questions that came in because there were a flurry of email.
Uh-oh.
And I won't be able to get through all of them because at last count, it was like, what, 57. I was like, I can't do
47 plus 10. Okay.
So this comes from Jonathan from Las Vegas, and he said, hey, Larry, people forget that there were actually two Genes on Star Trek, Gene Roddenberry and Gene Kuhn. Both were responsible for making changes to scripts submitted by readers, and both had a slightly different take on Star Trek in general and Kirk in specific. To the best of your knowledge, how did this impact Star Trek episodes? Boy, that's a really technical question. We don't have time for that, Jonathan.
We could do a panel.
We could do a whole panel. Well, you're going to get a short answer for that because we got lots of questions. But thank you so much for emailing. But go ahead, give it your best shot.
Good. Thank you for bringing up Gene Kuhn. Dorothy Fontana said that Star Trek had two good genes, Gene Kuhn and Gene Roddenberry. And and what happened in the second season? Gene Kuhn invented the Klingons. He invented the Federation name. He invented the Prime Directive. He invented a lot of things. And was like, he would sit home and do a script in 4 days and come back, which is exactly what Gene, who would like take forever and drive him crazy, he needed that. We could get into it. I do know that Gene and the Genes parted ways because Gene Roddenberry thought Gene Kuhn was bringing too much humor into the show.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And in the middle second season, he still wrote under his acronym.
I wonder what specific, what would be the best show that you feel that it would be too much humor in it?
Well, what the deal breaker was it Bread and Circuses or Piece of the Action? One of the comedy shows, they thought there was just a little. Gene thought it was just making them into little too cartoony.
But, I'm going to have to look at them again and see where this comedy is. That first season, second season.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The next question comes from Brady from Philadelphia.
Wow.
And this is exciting. He says, "Hey, La." What's L-A? La? Oh, maybe just La? Didn't finish it. La. Hey, La! That sounds like he's from Jersey, Philadelphia. Dr. McCoy is an iconic character, and people have certain expectations of an actor playing that role. What was your approach to the character on Star Trek Continues?
Wow. Well, you know, I'd been a McCoy fan for ages, which is part of the reason why I wound up doing it, and it was on 3 weeks' notice. I mean, you know, I'm a McCoy, and I love DeForest Kelly. And, you know, for years I've had my party impersonation of, you know, Jim, what are you doing, Jim?
I'm not a bricklayer.
I'm a doctor, not a bartender. Yeah. Wait, I'm both. Wait. So part of my concern was going in was, I hadn't acted in a long time, especially film. And I was really making sure that it was not a parody and an impersonation, that I wanted to channel it. And I did the first episode, and I really thought that I probably pulled back too much, actually. So the second show, I did kind of let it go and did get more into the, you know, somebody said, do more Southern gravel. And I said, okay. I was almost over-trying there so much. But no, I really, you know, there is so much you can do with McCoy, the little bits where you're honoring Dee, but you still have to be true to the story and the moment and the character. And the both of those stories, he didn't really have a raw edge, a rough edge. It was more... they were more in the hunt and the figuring out the puzzle kind of bit. He had a couple of moments in the first episode, I think, of Continues. You know, I never got to say, I'm a doctor, not a something. Never got to say, he's dead, Jim, or anything.
Oh, darn it!
We did have a this is damn peculiar line, you know.
It's a good one. So you just did the two episodes because you were filling in for the regular guy. Is that right?
Well, that was kind of part of it at the time it evolved. Part of it was Chuck Huber could not do the first McCoy. I did a couple. then it turned into I really wanted to work on my acting more. I didn't have time. My doc, all my other projects were as incredible as this was and as much fun as I was having. Everything was kind of mutual getting in everything else's way.
Ah.
So I decided to do that. We had to talk about it. I did that. But I'm a consulting, a creative consultant with the show.
Oh,
I'm in the think tank. If there's a crisis, I get pulled into.
Wow!
And just, you know, they'll say, continues to just not have a bunch of brainiac fans
right.
in the greater circle of everybody working on it. It's incredible. And that's why the sets look that way.
I think Vic is Shatner is a one-man army. He could realistically
do force of nature.
He is. He could do it all in one night. He's intense. I love that guy.
But he wants to live more than one day.
Yeah.
So it's good that there's an army around him. Yeah.
The next question comes from Paul from Corona Del Mar. And, hey, Larry, is it true Jerry Finnerman, Star Trek's director of photography, despite his third season credit, actually handed the reins to his gaffer during season three?
Wow.
These people, I'm telling you, they're
really
so crazy, aren't they?
That's not my expertise level, but I've heard that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But so
I don't want to go off on a Jerry Finnerman is the one that's, you know, the splash color that we replicate on Continues.
Okay.
When you, because the old thing was when NBC was owned by RCA and they wanted to sell color TVs in the mid-60s, you know, and so they had Star Trek was one of the coloriest?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
The splashiest colored shows out there.
Most vivid.
Most vivid. So when you're looking and you get the bit where they're in red and blue and gold, but then you'd see a back wall behind them and it'd have like just a splash of color, you know,
uh-huh.
It's just some gel would be, it's a gray wall and they wouldn't paint the walls, they would just light with color.
Oh.
And pools of color.
Was he the one responsible for lighting Shatner's
mm-hmm.
eyes?
They would do those kinds of things, yeah.
Woo! Give him the film noir look. Oh my, I always wonder who that was that lit his eyes. You know, I'm not going to tell you that story.
Stronger with you than without you. Yeah.
Okay, next question comes from Will from Burbank. Larry, were you a Trekkie prior to your role on Star Trek Continues? Well, obviously, you don't know Larry. Larry was born, came out of the womb wearing a Star...
No.
He was wearing a red shirt. He was a red shirt. He came out of the womb with his little red shirt.
And I lived to tell about it.
Yeah,
I have to thank my ninth grade science teacher, Mrs. Pollard, wherever you are,
okay.
for shaming me that she could not believe I wasn't watching Star Trek.
Ah, see that actually, mm-hmm. it's amazing how one mm-hmm. life touches so many other
mm-hmm.
lives. Next question is from Kyle from Salem, Oregon.
Wow.
He says, Larry, I loved your portrayal of Dr. McCoy on the web series Star Trek Continues, and wondered. Oh, we just covered this. Yep. I wondered why you
see
aren't
above.
Still doing it. See above. Yes, okay.
But thank you. That's very sweet.
That's
thank
very
you so much.
That's very nice, Kyle. Thank you for saying that. Next question comes from Chandler from St. Louis, Missouri, right?
Yeah.
MI is Missouri. I thought that was Minnesota. Oh, okay, never mind.
Or Michigan.
Michigan. Thank you. Larry, a lot of Star Trek fans dismiss the entire third season, but there are quite a few super cool episodes. Do you have a favorite episode from that season and why?
Number one, notice how when he says the third season, he just automatically assumes we all know he's talking the original series.
Oh, okay.
Like the other shows didn't exist. This is the way we used to talk. So he just gave away his era there. I know it is true that a lot of people thought that Spock's character got bastardized because Gene stepped back, and I've gone blank on his name. Oh, my God. The producer, Fred Freiberger, didn't treat things as well. They were having their budgets cut, yada, yada. And they thought that in some of the shows that Spock and his Vulcanus was kind of bastardized a little bit. And there was a faction of fans. It was like, we don't recognize the third season as canon for a long – yeah, in the old days. But yeah, there's Tholian Web and Enterprise Incident, and there's lots of good.
Like the Tholian Web.
Yeah.
Like the web. Next question, Rudy Palo Alto says, Larry, if you could be cast as any character in a Star Trek episode, who would it be and why?
You mean besides McCoy?
Beside McCoy.
Well, here's my thing. We finally got to the Andorians and Teller. I'm a big underdog guy. Because I became a McCoy fan and Scotty fan when I was a kid. And all you could buy for Star Trek was posters and stuff that was Kirk, Spock, and the Enterprise. Kirk, Spock, and the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. And like, what about McCoy? What about Scotty? What do we got?
Check
them. So, yeah, and all of them. So I'm kind of an underdog guy. And I loved Journey to Babel is one of my favorite episodes, and I love that's the one they introduced the Andorians and the Tellarites, mm-hmm. and many more, we don't even know their names, the little gold guys. And I just always, and then the Andorians got some play, and they're cool, even though they've been done differently every iteration of Star Trek.
Are those the blue ones?
The blue ones with the antenna. And we just barely ever saw the Tellarites, and I just love them. They're the pig face guys.
Oh yeah.
But I guess it's hard to, well, how do you make the argumentative culture work? Well, Enterprise finally got around to having them again, and I've just always, but we never went there. And I've just always wanted to be part of a show. I would love to play a real. Somebody would say I have a Tellarite pig fetish or something, and I don't. And I found lots of closet Tellarite pig fans out there, Tellarite fans. But I would love to do a...
And there you go. He just gave you...
Or play Will Rogers on a holodeck.
Oh, well, okay. There you go. That comes... I'd think about that
first.
That's
my other passion.
See, that's somebody needs to write a whole episode for Larry. Next one is from Lionel, Augusta, Georgia. What is your... Did we answer this? What's your favorite Star Trek episode from the original series, the other television series, and of all the feature films? And what do you think of the last two Star Trek films? Why don't we just do, what do you think of the last two Star Trek films?
Well, I'll say real quick, Journey to Babel and Doomsday Machine are my original series favorites. Although, you know, there's a top five, top ten. You know,
people either love these last two Star Trek movies or hate them. And Albert and I love them.
And it's not about age. There's lots of younger. I had a guy in Phoenix say, I did not know Star Trek. I watched the JJ movies. And here's the truth. A lot of people that watch those then want more. They go and get the Netflix, or they get the remastered Blu-rays. They grab those and they do original series and they just start mowing through. You know, we binge watch now. So Next Gen and, you know, Voyager, DS9, Enterprise. And I had one guy go, well, I love those movies so much. I started watching all the shows, and I watched all, you know, 737 hours of everything else. And now I can't stand the JJ movies. They're so shallow compared to what I've been watching. You know, so it's wacky. But sometimes that gets over-trumped. There are people that are very, you know, to me, look at all the millions of it's not the choices I would have made, but it got Star Trek back. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of new fans we have now, because we were getting into kind of an age thing. It's like, does anybody under 30 watch Star Trek anymore? That weren't being raised by their parents.
Oh my God, I got to tell you something.
Tell me something.
Real quick, because Albert, remember you told me the story? What story did you tell me about Arnold Schwarzenegger and William Shatner?
Oh yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Okay, you have to impersonate both of them.
No, William Shatner.
They were in a park. So basically, they're in a park somewhere eating. Schwarzenegger is with his grandkids.
They were at a Brentwood restaurant.
Oh, at a Brentwood restaurant. I don't know. Things get lost in translation when I tell stories. But they were at a Brentwood restaurant. Schwarzenegger's eating. Shatner comes up to him, introduces himself, and says, "Hi, Bill Shatner, nice to meet you." And gets totally snubbed by Schwarzenegger. He's like, "Oh, thank you very much." Or what did he say? Yeah, what did he say?
Well, he just said thank you, shook his hand, and that was it.
And that's it. And just went back and continued stuffing his face with food. And his little grandson says, and I'm going to paraphrase, I don't know what happened, but, you know, Grandpapa, that was William Shatner. And then Schwarzenegger's like, "Who's William?" What did he say?
Yeah.
He goes, Who's William Shatner? And I found this unbelievable. I still don't believe this, but it was, where was it on the news, right?
Well, that guy will never run for president.
He did not know. How could Arnold Schwarzenegger not know who William Shatner is? He didn't know who he was.
I started to say he grew up in Austria, but then, you know,
it's
been a few years since.
He would have run into him somewhere, but this was on what show? The Mark and Brian show? Or?
No, it was on Celebrity Net Worth.
Oh, Celebrity Net Worth. Yeah. And a guy who's one of the reporters happened to just be eating there at lunch and
witnessed the whole thing. The governor.
So there you go.
There you go, governor. You're not so tough.
All right.
But see, the new generation. They will redeem the errors of their of their elders.
But the little boy knew he knew who William Shatner was. God bless him. He goes, "Well, Grandma, don't you watch the Priceline commercials?" He said, "Oh, that guy." That's what he said about William Shatner. Can't believe
I obviously
it.
Never watched it on Boston Legal.
I know. Okay, last question. Tony from Oklahoma City. Larry.
Oh, my peeps.
Oh,
okay.
Are you from Oklahoma?
I'm just a dumb Okie. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't tell you that.
James okay. Gardner was from.
He was. He was from Norman. James Bumgarner.
853-OKG license plate. I am a Rockford Files fanatic. I just finished all the
my
seasons.
My mom said if we hadn't helped him with his math, he never would have got out of high school.
Oh,
yes.
Really?
No, the Bumgarners are an old Norman family. Yeah.
Oh, I did not know.
Statue of him now in downtown Norman.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, so he chopped his name because it was
just
Gardner.
A Hollywood
I didn't
thing.
Know that.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Cut the bum out of
Gardner. I thought he was he was such a great actor. I mean, I was a huge
natural.
Rock profile. Just so natural. And Jane, who was the blonde dancer? Debbie Reynolds. Oh, God, I hope it's Debbie Reynolds. She said that he was, out of all of her leading men, and you know she's played with some of the best, she said he was her favorite actor because of his comedic timing. He was really great. We just lost him in August, God bless him.
Yeah.
Tony, Oklahoma City, for the longest time it was accepted that Star Trek never did well ratings wise but recently it started to surface that ratings weren't the real reason. What do you think, you in all capitals, you think what do you think the most likely reason was at the time? Was it political?
Yes. It was personal. Yeah, and he's talking about Mark Cushman's books. So these are the Voyages book. He actually paid Nielsen to like these 60s rating numbers are like gold or something, but they finally got them out. They just blamed it on ratings. The network, Roddenberry was sticking his neck out so much and, you know, pushing the envelope. The things that they love Star Trek for now, he had to push the envelope to get, he and the staff. And they just thought he was a lot of the network brass just thought he was a troublemaker and, you know, wouldn't kowtow and wouldn't do what they wanted. And they just turned into. They just wanted an excuse to get rid of it after a while. You know, it was a moneymaker.
So they couldn't see. They couldn't see the ratings, though, because
they
back
never
then
knew.
They didn't.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, I think they were posted at the time, but you know, the meme over the 70s and the 80s was, oh, we got killed by bad ratings, and they would either win or come in second in their time slot, in their half hour or their hour time slot. Even the last year they were on, they were still when they were like in the graveyard Friday night slot.
Mm.
They were just tired of messing with Gene. He was just this upstart producer that was just snubbing them. You know, he would want to push the envelope a little bit on some of these stories and get into themes and issues. And, you know, he had a show before Star Trek called The Lieutenant about a Marine base during peacetime. Uh-huh. And there was a show about race.
Wow.
And it was censored and never got to air.
Wow.
And that's part of the reason why he went to Star. He said, if I have shows about, you know, spotted aliens and dancing girls and spaceships and rockets, no one will take it seriously in the suits, and so I can talk about things, and the audience is smart enough to get the metaphors.
Well, did you know, Larry? and I believe Albert again told me this or brought this to my attention. And again, I hope I don't get it wrong, but I believe, of course, Lucille Ball is the one who was responsible for putting Star Trek on the air, and I believe
she stuck up for it.
Yeah, but did you know? I hope I'm right, Albert. If you're giving me inaccurate information, I might kill you. Apparently, when they pitched they said, "Oh, we want to do a show called Star Trek." She didn't even know what the show was about at all. And when they told her, she said, "Really? That's what it's about?" But it had already been scheduled and shot and ready to air, so she couldn't right?
She did know. No, when they first talked about it, like when they were talking about doing a pilot and can we afford to do a pilot, because Desilu was trying to get out of doing sitcoms. Because right at the same time was when Mannix and Mission Impossible and Star Trek, especially the last two there. Now they're franchise, you know, movies and things. They've been around forever. But they were a big gamble for them. In fact, a lot of people say that they've spent so much money and lost money on both of those that's why Desilu had to sell out to Paramount a couple of years later. But it's look at the legacy. But the joke is that for a while she thought, and this came from Herb Solo in his book, who was the development guy that worked with Bob Jones. When he'd said Star Trek, in her mind that turned into entertainers in USO shows in the South Pacific in World War II.
Right. That's what she thought it was.
Yeah.
Right. That's what it was. And when she found out what it really was, like, what? Really? But she kept it on, and she's the one. Yeah. If it wasn't for Lucille Ball, there would be no Star Trek.
Half of her board was like, we're going to lose money on this. Get out of it. Get out of it. And yeah. She said, nope, we've got to grow. We've got to do bold things. And she hung in there for them.
Oh, there's nothing that woman could not do. Now, we just have a couple minutes. I want to go over, okay, so your Trekland blog, your VidChat.
Yep, I have video interviews with a lot of people, stuff I haven't put up. A lot of the actors and a lot of the designers, writers, old and new. So go and check. It's on YouTube, but if you go to the blog, you can search for them.
Okay, and that blog is treklandblog.com. Yep. Again, all of these
you can
links
get to it at my central.
Through
yeah.
the central, LarryNemisek.com, but yep. it's treklandblog.com. And then we already talked about the Con of Wrath documentary. Mm-hmm. And we want to give him money to make it, so he is on fundraising
it's
website.
It's just I don't have a Kickstarter or Indiegogo.
Oh, you don't.
It's just been a little low key thing. I have a PayPal donation
right through
link.
Your
I've got
okay.
rewards.
Okay, and, so let's give Larry yep. money, all of our
when
money.
You, when you see me, yeah, we're very modest. Want. When you see me at a convention, guys, I have a live show that I do, a two-hour thing, usually on Saturday nights at conventions when I'm a guest. And okay. it's a meetup thing where you could give money, but also we have trivia prizes, and I have these rare clips, and I have pieces from the documentary.
Oh, God, we want to come.
So it's a kind of a little two-hour
When's
Dr. Trek show.
Here that we could come?
Probably going to be Comic Palooza over the Halloween weekend.
Where's Comic Palooza? I've never.
It's here in L.A.
Oh. Oh, good.
I'm sorry. What? The Comic Palooza, that's Houston. Kamikaze.
It's
Stan Lee's Kamikaze. Oh,
when,
my God.
When and where? Halloween?
Halloween weekend, yes.
Will you let us know?
Yes, I will.
Albert, I want to come. We'll give you
yeah.
money.
I'm doing a panel for Continues, I think.
Yay. Yeah, yeah. Oh, so they'll be there,
but
too.
But I'll have a little table, and but I'll do that, I think, my thing at night. Yeah.
All right, so you got to come and give, and you can also donate money, because we want to get this film made for sure. So go to his website and give him money. Don't give it to the kids. They don't need it. Give it to Larry. We want to see this Con of Wrath documentary. Yeah. Also,
Trekland Speaker
yes. Is the CDs. You mm-hmm. can buy those directly from his mm-hmm. website as well, LarryNemisek.com.
Or at a con.
He's got this London convention coming up, so I know I have a huge fan base, my guys in London, you know, my British boys, so go see him. He's at, where are you in London?
It's at the Excel Center.
Excel Center in yep. London. And then Trekland Trunk, non-scuzzy way to share items for his archives. He's got rare draft scripts, set plans, memos, promo items. And what website can we see
Just
those?
Just go to the Facebook page.
The Facebook
Trekland,
page.
Trekland Trunk. And if you join it, then I'll put a thing there. And if you're interested, you hear about it. If you don't, I don't get in your face about it.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, we want it. Enterprise in Space.
I have to say that real quickly. This is an amazing thing. It's for science kids, science teachers. We're going to orbit. I'm with part of a group that's been working 3 years. I just got in with it the last 6 months. It's like it's finally going to be a craft named Enterprise Orbiting, but it's going to have real science students' experiments running for free on a craft that's designed by a contest. But it's real space. It's going to orbit.
Wow.
And all we're saying, it's not a Kickstarter Indiegogo, because we have a lot of corporate and industry people want to give money and donate, and they're going to test some space tech on it. It's going to be retrieved. It's going to re-enter and go on display. What we say is 2 million people around the world give $20, and it's in. It'll launch in 2019.
Wow.
And everyone that gives, aside from your little knowing that you're there, you get to fly virtually, because your name will be on a chip that will fly. And then when it's retrieved and comes back, it's going to be on display at either Air and Space or one of the other major science museums. And you can go up, if you're visiting, you can go up and find your name and know that you flew in orbit.
Wow!
On an Enterprise.
Wow! Oh, I want to do it!
I'm glad you do.
How can we find out about that?
EnterpriseInSpace.com.
Enterprise.
And it is just launched. Tomorrow is the huge official launch.
Oh, so say it again, the website.
EnterpriseInSpace.com.
EnterpriseInSpace.com.
There's a Facebook page, of course.
Wow!
Yep, Enterprise
Space. Oh, we're going to do that, Albert, for sure. And
that's
then,
the hot thing you're going to be hearing about the next few days. Weeks.
I'm going to get my damn chip. I'm gonna get me a chip, honey. It's coming. We're getting it. Last thing, I want to do a group mention for the Stellar Cartography.
Oh, my new book. Yes, it's still at Amazon. Yeah.
Oh, it's on Amazon. It's called mm-hmm. Stellar Cartography.
Star Trek Stellar Cartography.
On Amazon.com. Buy it. We want to buy it. Star Trek continues and its various awards. You've got tons of awards.
We're starting to rack them up there.
Oh, and you got a voiceover coming, right?
Well, I'm working on my... Yes, that's my new thing. I'm getting into that for coming years. I've been about to do my demo and get out there. So, you know.
Well, you did a great job with Dr. McCoy.
Well, thank you, my dear.
And what is this Hollywood Sci-Fi Museum board?
That's I'm on the board for the Hollywood Sci-Fi Museum that grew out of a bridge restoration project. That's Houston Huddleston's project, HollywoodSciFi.com.
Yeah, well, let's do it. And Trek Guru thing in planning, last thing. What's that?
That's kind of, I'm trying to invent a whole new thing to take what's in my brain and in my archives and share it with fans in a different kind of way. So I'm working. That's the thing I'm working on. That so just like pay attention.
Does that mean
guys.
That we have to have you come back so you can tell us all about it next year?
Next year, sometime, hopefully.
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to.
We are going to have Larry back because we didn't get to the rest of those emails.
Oh,
they
no.
were good questions, though. Weren't
they? You had some hardcores out there.
Wow. Oh God, I didn't get through the rest of them. I don't even know what other questions they had. I just took the first ones that came in. Well, I want to thank you so much, Larry, for coming on. Did you have fun?
I did. Priscilla, this is amazing. I always love live radio anyway and emails and everything. So, no, this is wonderful. I'm so glad you got here, though. We were holding our breath.
I know. Well, I was putting on my fake nails. I got glue in my eye. I got crazy glue in my eye, and I smashed my foot in the closet. But I said, come hell or high water, I will interview that damn Larry Nemesek if it's the last thing I do. I stalked him at the damn Burbank Film Festival. And Albert will cry if I don't get him on. So we got you on.
You just so wanted
you
to try your new applause track.
Oh my God. We got to give. So let's take Larry out with the applause track, Albert. So we want to say, Larry, thank you so much for coming on the show. And you make a commitment to come back next year, maybe in May.
I'll do. Twist my arm. Sure.
Yes. And then you got to tell us about all the exciting
projects. Okay. Well, and by that time, we'll be in the heart of convention season. So.
Oh, yay.
Yeah.
All right. Convention. That'll be my first convention. I've never been to a convention. I'm going to go to this one you tell me about.
Kamikaze. Yes, at Stan Lee. Yeah. Second or third year, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, here in LA.
Oh, wow. I want to check it out because I'm a producer on a pilot for a sci-fi called Subject 5. So I guess eventually I'm going to have to go to one of these Comic-Con things. So,
I think you'll want to go take advantage of the platform it affords you.
Yeah. Well, Larry, thank you so much. Anything you want to say to your fans?
No, just thank you guys. I mean, it's been the last two or three years especially I've been writing and working in Trekland for 20 years, and the last two or three years have just been an explosion for me. So if you're around the country and you know someone doing a convention, have them and get a hold of me. I'd love to come. There's corn, especially the north.
I am trying to get Anthony Dyson, the designer for R2-D2, the original. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get him in a convention, but nobody wants to bring him here because he lives on the island of Malta. And apparently it's expensive to...
It would be, yeah.
So maybe you and Anthony could team up. Yeah, if you book Larry, I'm bringing Tony Dyson with you. Well, for sure. LarryNemesek.com. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you for your questions. And we're going to have Larry back next year. So thank you, everybody. So let's take Larry out. Let's say goodbye to your fans.
Woo! Goodbye, guys. Goodbye, guys. We'll see you in Trekland.
Bye, Larry!
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.